The city of Los Angeles continues to burn, but why can we not put out these fires? Fargo City Commissioners say we should make NP Avenue more bike-friendly. But why would we spend money on this? And federal revenues are down in the first 2 months of the new fiscal year. But why are they down when it appears as though tax rates have stayed about the same? We have a lot of questions to address here on the Steve Hallstrom Show today. Good afternoon, my friend. Good to be with you here on the program today. Well, I am excited because we have football tonight. There was no football the last couple of nights. And I'm excited because tonight we have one of the two semifinals in big school football. We got Notre Dame. We got Penn State in a game that I think should be a hard-hitting game. Feels like maybe low scoring. I like Notre Dame in this one. We'll see what happens. Should be a good close game. Can't wait for that one. And then tomorrow, the one I'm really excited about, Texas and Ohio State. Fun stuff. We need something now that the Bison are done, right? Bison are done playing, probably not done celebrating up on the north side of town. And if you're a Vikings fan, I don't know. I have sort of had my hope sucked out of me about the Vikings in this game that happened the other night. Isn't that something? One game, and I'm like, yeah, they don't have it. So we'll see. I don't know. They keep telling us that they can fix what screwed them up against Detroit the other night. I don't know. This is not a great matchup for them. They're on the road. They've got to have some doubts, got to have a little bit of a lack of confidence. Should be a very interesting next few days. Well, hopefully it's an interesting next 2 hours here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It's good to be with you here on this Thursday afternoon. Thank you to those that came out and hung out with us at Kingpin's last night for the big giveaway. Dennis, a trucker from Leonard, North Dakota, won the big prize last night. That was a lot of fun. And, boy, he's going to have a heck of a good time. Two nights at the Four Seasons. Two tickets, front center for the Eagles at the Sphere. Spending money, plane tickets, the whole nine yards. It's going to be fun. Had a chance to visit with him today. He said, I've never won anything in my life. I said, well, you can't say that anymore, brother. So life is good if you're Dennis from Leonard. Absolutely. If you've got a comment or question, we'd love to have you join the show today. 701-271-1100. Is the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment and get in this week at valleychristian.co. Coming to you live today from the Steve Hallstrom Studio, built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to pccnd.com to learn more. Well, I got my invitation today to the Trump-Vance inauguration from the inauguration committee, and I got two tickets to the inauguration ceremony, two tickets to the parade afterwards. I don't know what that means, but I guess I get a seat somewhere along the parade route, but I didn't get my tickets to the ball. That's the one thing I really wanted. Never been to a presidential inaugural ball, probably never will. If I gave a lot of money to the campaign, I'm guessing I would have been able to get, but I guess I didn't give a penny to the campaign, so I guess other people get to go to the ball. I get it, it's crowded, you can't sit down, there's a million people there, but Trump and Melania come, and they do a little talk, and then they dance, and everybody's got their formal wear on. I don't have a tux anymore. I've got a black suit that can work for that, but I haven't put it on for a few years, so we'll see. But doggone it, I was kind of hoping that that might happen. So we'll find another way to have a good time after the inauguration. We will be in D.C., by the way. Let's see. This is not next Monday, but the Monday following. And I'll be doing the show live from Washington, D.C., following the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump, President number 47, and J.D. Vance as Vice President. And we'll be broadcasting from there throughout the day. Scotty will be doing the What's on Your Mind show. I'll have the Steve Hallstrom show. And then Tuesday morning, Scott will do his show there before we head back home. But I cannot wait. It's going to be, I think, such I don't say euphoric celebration, but there will be some jubilation for sure. I was just talking to a friend about this last night. And I said, can you imagine if we were sitting here January 9th, 2025, and after 4 years of Joe Biden, we had 4 years of her that we had to get ready for, turning this into whatever sort of test tube, Bunsen burner, beaker experiment they want to turn the country into for another 4 years? Holy smokes. So excited about this. And someone was telling me today, I don't know, Democrats or Republicans, they just can't seem to get their act together and govern. I said, well, I hear you, and I'm not going to argue with you. I said, I am encouraged, though, that when it came time to get a House Speaker figured out, that got taken care of fairly quickly. Maybe the Republicans will get in line and actually govern this time around. We will see what happens. So excited to be there and do a lot of broadcasting from there over those couple of days. It's going to be a ton of fun. Kevin Flynn, also from the Need to Know Morning Show, will be out in D.C. as well. So we'll have you covered on Inauguration Day with some local angles in addition to some great national perspective and coverage from Fox News Channel as well. All right, 4:12 here on the Steve Ahlstrom Show. It's time for us to get to work on the program. Time for the 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines to get you caught up on what promises to be a very busy show as we reflect on what has been a very busy day. We begin with the almanac for today, January 9th. Average high is 18. Average low is 1. Record high 51 back in 2012. Record low minus 38 in 1887. We've had like 4 days in a row of disgusting temperatures from 1887. Sunrise this morning was at 8:10. Sunset will be at 4:58. We'll gain 1 minute and 33 seconds of daylight today. In the markets today was generally a positive day on Wall Street, but not by a whole lot. The Dow was up 106, S&P 500 up 10, NASDAQ was down 10. WTI crude oil up a dollar. They say that there's winter fuel demand on the rise because of the cold snap. So oil prices going up a little bit, about a buck today. Gold today up $20 an ounce, silver up 34 cents, and Bitcoin down $2,300 at $91,667. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas today is $3.06. That's down a penny from yesterday. North Dakota's at $2.84, Minnesota $2.94, South Dakota $2.83, and diesel today $3.54 a gallon. In the news today, Los Angeles continues to burn nearly 180,000 people under evacuation orders, according to the county sheriff. I actually thought it might be more than that. Was there 10 million people live in L.A., something like that? 5 people have been reported dead now because of the wildfires, although evacuation orders in Hollywood Hills were lifted earlier today, so I guess that's good. There are 5 fires burning at this particular time, and a couple of them are fairly well contained, but some of them not at all. There was a postponement of an NHL game last night, but the NBA game for the Lakers is set to take place in L.A. tonight. The Minnesota Vikings have been told to prepare for a potentially different venue to play in. They might go to Phoenix to play instead of Los Angeles as they are set to take on the Rams in L.A. on Monday night. So they may have a change of location. That would stink for the Rams, wouldn't it? You work all season long, get a home playoff game by winning your division, and then you have to play that somewhere else. But considering the problems that people are having in the real world, I guess those aren't huge problems. Forum reports today that one of the big topics that happened at the State of the Cities address held by the chamber earlier today was a note from Horace Mayor Jeff Trudeau saying that in the year 2024, the city of Horace issued permits for 286 new single-family homes. That means Horace accounted for 17% of single-family home permits issued in the entire state of North Dakota. 17% just in Horace there. During their meeting, Fargo City Commissioners last night explored how the city could reinvent the Fargo Civic Center, a public building that has sat basically unused for years. They think it could be an active event space for the community. They, on a 4-1 vote, decided to create a request for qualifications platform to see if anybody wants to step in and manage events at the Civic Center. The lone dissenting voice was Dave Pepcorn. Dave said, you don't ask for an RFQ to open the building until you're ready to open the building, but we don't have any money to spend on getting the building ready to go, so why are we doing this? I think Dave Pepcorn, a voice of reason on this one. Fargo City Commissioners also, on a 5-0 vote, voted to go ahead with a new project that will cost about $2.8 million. Everybody in on this, The project would be a multi-year effort to transform the NP Avenue corridor in downtown Fargo to prioritize bicycles and pedestrians. This would be spanning from A Street North to Broadway this year. So everybody, even the fiscal hawks, say, let's do this. I thought that was interesting. I have to ask Michelle or Dave what they think about that, because they usually are the ones saying, I don't know about that. WDAY Radio reports that Democrat State Representative Lori Beth Hager of Fargo says, I told you this yesterday, that she wants the state's minimum wage to go up from $7.25 to $9.25. But she says the way she wants to do it is do it via petition and get it on the ballot and have the state's residents decide this instead of happening in the legislature. She is kind of hinting that I don't know that we can get much traction in the legislature, so maybe we just go to the people and do it that way. So that's being talked about out in Bismarck as the new legislative session begins out there. The Forum reports tonight that a survey has been conducted by Fargo Public Schools asking whether residents support a $350 million bond proposal, fancy way of saying invoice, coming to the people of Fargo, to replace consolidated elementary schools, build a middle school, and an early childhood education center, plus repairs and renovations to existing schools. The survey went out, and they found that more than 55% of people by phone and more than 40% online expressed favor for the idea of the referendum there. 40% by phone and 46% online expressed opposition. They then told the respondents that the proposal would cost homeowners about $1,873 a month for every $100,000 of market value for their house. After that happened, the numbers dropped a little bit. The 55% in favor went down to 48% by phone, and the 40% online who liked it went down to 12% after finding out the numbers there. The consulting firm that did this survey said it's not uncommon for people to have a different opinion once they hear how much something is going to cost. I don't know that I would answer the first question until I knew the second one, but maybe not everybody thinks those things through that way. The website KQ4MN.com is once again alive and ticking. You know what that is? Kendall Qualls for Minnesota. Yes, he ran unsuccessfully for governor back in 2022. However, it's expected that he is going to make another run for governor in 2026. That news may be coming in the next few weeks. Our friend Michelle Tafoy was one of the big campaign advisors for Kendall Qualls back then. So Tim Walz will have at least one opponent. Scott Jensen has hinted that he might do it, but Kendall Qualls has a website getting fired up for the potential. Meanwhile, the Minnesota legislature is underway down in St. Paul for this 2025 session. One of the big topics being discussed is online sports betting. Testimony taking place today. This is one of the big hot-button issues there. Proponents say that instead of using regulated and government-approved websites and online products, Minnesotans have to use offshore and unregulated websites that brazenly flout gaming laws meant to protect consumers. They say people are doing it anyway. However, there was testimony from some sociologists as well that took the stand there today, saying that there are many Minnesotans who are problem gamblers already, and this would make it worse. So there's a little back and forth battle on that issue taking place down in St. Paul. CNBC reports that tech billionaire Elon Musk said earlier today that his budget-cutting effort on behalf of President Trump would most likely not find $2 trillion in savings. Musk told political strategist Mark Penn in an interview that the $2 trillion figure was a best-case outcome. He thinks that there's still a chance, but only a good shot at that. I don't know. Still sounds good to me. If they got $1.5 trillion, we take that. And one more for you. ESPN has announced the viewership statistics from the Bison win over Montana State on Monday night. As you know, the Bison won the game 35-32. 2.4 million viewers tuned in, making it the second most watched FCS championship game on record. The 2025 number is more than double the viewership numbers of last year when South Dakota State won the championship. At its peak during the broadcast, there were 3.1 million people tuned in to the game. And those are some of the stories making headlines here on this Thursday afternoon. When we come back, two more huge U.S. companies are donating seven figures to the Trump inaugural. But if you listen to some of the legacy media reports, it's really a bad thing. We'll talk about that coming up next. A little bit of breaking news here this afternoon from the newsroom. Moorhead Public Service is experiencing a power outage. The impacted areas 30th Street and 11th Avenue South. Crews are working on the outage in the area of Meadows Golf Course, according to a source. Moorhead Public Service says crews are working as quickly as possible to restore power. So if you live in that area, you might be coming home and finding that all the lights are off and the clocks are blinking at you. So that's not a whole lot of fun right there. So just wanted to pass that along to you. If you need to get a mess cleaned up at your home, your business, your lake place, the farm, wherever it is, my friend John Minton at Rowan Joe Junk Haul and Removal would love to help you out. John is a 30-year combat veteran. That means he knows how to get things done. And the Minton family, they like to say it this way: if we do a job, we're putting our family's name on it, so you know we're going to do it right. They say they're proud to serve the community. They want to help you out, get rid of that mess that you've got going on there, whether it's residential, commercial, hoarding clear out, maybe grandma moved out of that house that she's been in for so long, and now you got to do something with all that. They don't judge. They just get the job done over there, Rowan Joe. Removal and small demolition, they can do that as well. RowanJoeJunk.com, RoenJoeJunk.com. Don't be fooled by those fast talkers from out of town that come in and want you to think that they can get the job done for you. Around here, we know if you need junk hauled out, you call John and the team at Rowan Joe Junk Haul and Removal. When it's got to go, call Rowan Joe. RowanJoeJunk.com. Get the job done right. Get it done fast by some people you can trust. Good faith, family, freedom folks over there at Row and Joe Junk Haul and Removal. All right. I saw the headlines in CNBC today. Google and Microsoft have both said they're donating $1 million to Donald Trump's inauguration fund. Basically, their headlines go something like this: joining other tech giants, Google and Microsoft have decided to pony up seven figures for the inauguration fund. Here's what they say about Google. Google donated $1 million. And Trump signaled late last year that he wouldn't rule out antitrust enforcement, a particularly sore spot for Google. The Microsoft headline reads like this: Microsoft is offering $1 million after kicking in $500,000 the first time he was inaugurated 8 years ago. The company is looking to Trump to oversee favorable artificial intelligence policy in the next 4 years. Now, maybe this is just a chip on my shoulder about legacy media and how they report things. Maybe I'm seeing ghosts. Maybe I'm making too big of a deal out of this. But isn't it funny that when these companies give money to the Donald Trump inauguration, it's not done because they want to be part of American history. They want to make sure that it's a time that Americans can be proud of. People from all over the world will be tuning in to watch what's happening, and they want to show that they're proud Americans. No, it's they gave $1 million, but you know that Donald Trump is going to be ruling out artificial intelligence, so they're trying to bribe him. Google, well, it's antitrust enforcement. That's a sore spot for them, so they're trying to kiss up to Donald Trump. You just didn't hear it being said that way before when Joe Biden was inaugurated. Now, I will tell you, I don't have those headlines memorized, but it certainly seems as though we're seeing these things reported with just a little bit of a, oh, yeah, you know what they're doing, right? They're trying to get cozy with that guy because Trump will take a bribe. You know that. I don't know. It just rings, it rings the wrong way in my ears or on my eyes when I read these things. They can't just be, here's what they're doing. It's always got to be some little ulterior motive, because you know that Trump isn't an honest guy, of course, and he'll do them favors. So it just bothers me when I read it. 4:30 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It is time now to check in with the local newsroom. Austin Erickson is here, who has been keeping an eye on things going on around town. Good sir, I saw you just put a note out about that Moorhead power outage.
Yeah,
that's where
now,
I got it from. Thank
and
you.
Now Moorhead Public Service, right when I save it, like 2 minutes after, power's back on.
Okay, well, good.
So they're looking to find out what caused that outage, but a listener said they were in the areas of the Meadows,
mm-hmm.
which is right where I live. So I was like, I hope that I don't have to eat everything in my refrigerator tonight.
Yes.
I hope my dogs aren't going crazy because the heat's going down.
Okay.
But that power outage in Moorhead in the area of the Meadows has been resolved.
Well, it was balmy today, too, by the way, so it's not like the last few days where it's 5 below.
Yeah, I walked out, and I was like, is stuff melting already?
Yeah, it feels good out there today. Well, good job being on top of it when it happened. Good job. So many times we report on things when they happen, but then we don't ever find out if things are resolved. So
yeah.
Well done to you, sir, on getting both sides
of
that.
Yeah, we don't have a cause yet on that, but we'll let you know if there is one. But in other news today, this was an interview I did earlier in the day for WDAY Midday, but a North Dakota lawmaker wants the state's minimum wage to be raised from $7.25 an hour. That minimum wage is the same as the federal government's, which hasn't been raised since 2009. Dem NPL State Representative Lori Beth Hager of Fargo says she introduced bills in the past two legislative sessions to raise that minimum wage but didn't get any support. She wants to put the plan in front of voters to get the minimum wage up to $9.25 an hour with a cost of living increase, but that would require thousands of North Dakotans to sign a petition to create a ballot measure. Hager reacts to arguments that some believe no one is being paid minimum wage in North Dakota. Now, I reached out to the North Dakota congressional delegation asking if they support raising the federal minimum wage, because some argue that the minimum wage shouldn't be any higher than what the federal minimum wage is. Senator John Hoeven says the best way to increase wages is through a strong economy, creating jobs and increasing demand for labor. Congresswoman Julie Fedorchak didn't mention if she supports raising or the minimum wage federally, but says, I trust the elected North Dakota legislators to determine the best wage policy for the state. Senator Kevin Cramer says mandating an increase in the minimum wage is not a way to raise wages. The way to do so is to knock down regulations for business, for investors, for financial institutions, and that's what we're going to do in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I just don't know how many people make minimum wage. If you're paying $7.25, you're not going to have anybody working for you. So I don't know. It seems like a straw man argument to me. But that's how I see it, and maybe there are people out there that are making $7.25. I would like to know
in smaller towns where they don't have a huge hub like a Fargo or a Jamestown, Grand Forks, like Headinger or something like
yeah,
that.
That's a good question.
There's nowhere else to go to get a job unless you drive a good half hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So maybe that's something the state needs to do, is needs to say, hey, is that actually being paid? But I remember Chris Rock bit on Saturday Night Live where he was like, you know why they have a minimum wage? Because if they could, they'd pay you less.
And they would have nobody working for them. Again,
that's
back
true.
To my earlier point. So true.
But otherwise, North Dakota lawmakers are pushing a bill addressing the lack of reliable ambulance services in rural areas, something that Minnesota has done in the last few years. The Senate bill was introduced in response to rising rates of ambulance service. According to the North Dakota Emergency Medical Association, a large percentage of ambulance services in the state say they're in danger of closing down within the next 5 years. The bill would create a program providing support and staffing to ambulance services in danger of shutting down.
Okay, interesting. Worth keeping an eye out on that one.
And a lot of rural areas, you're maybe half hour, 45 minutes away from an ambulance. So to have no service, you're doing even worse there.
Yeah, we were talking about grocery stores shutting down in some rural areas. Same thing with ambulance service. Yeah.
Yep. And then for Minnesota, this is a pressing issue. The state of Minnesota's contract with more than 35,000 home care workers is set to expire tomorrow. Service Employees International Union, which represents the workers, has been in negotiations for months with the Minnesota Department of Health. Workers held a rally at the Capitol in St. Paul Wednesday. Some of the issues they want addressed in a new contract include health care costs, the workforce shortage, and pay.
Okay.
So a lot of issues facing legislatures in both North Dakota and Minnesota.
Both sides of the river.
Minnesota legislative session set to begin on Tuesday, and there's a lot of unease for at least Democrats with one seat majority for Republicans with one seat yet to be filled and then a tied in the Senate.
Yeah, it's turned into a big deal, a lawsuit against the governor and all that good stuff.
And
thank you, Austin.
Speaker designate Lisa Daymuth says she doesn't even know if she'll allow the seating of that representative Brad Tabke if he wins his court seat.
Well, she's just being silly. Politicians do that sometimes. Got to put him
in
there.
I wouldn't want to be in charge because no matter what, a lot of people are angry with you.
That is true. It's a blood sport sometimes. Thank you, Austin. 4:36. Let's check in the news or the weather center now that we've had our news update and get the latest look at the forecast. Take it away, Dino. Hey, if you need a hand for a few hours, a few weeks, maybe a few months, Labor Masters is the place to call. Get the quality, reliable help you need today. Did you know they work with more than 200 businesses in the Fargo-Moorhead area to provide a big range of daily and temporary employment positions? We've used Nancy's team a bunch. They do a great job for us. It's more than just day labor, too. Permanent placement, direct hire. When you need a hand, think Labor Masters. You can give them a call at 701-566-8755 or go online to labormasters.net and get the quality, reliable help that you need today. 4:41 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. And it is one of the interesting things, or one of the things I like to do in the show this time of year is kind of look ahead to the year that's upcoming in as far as certain industries and certain lines of work and just kind of figure out what things are looking like through the eyes of the people that do those jobs day to day. And I'm pleased to have in the studio here with me this afternoon, Derek Guthmiller. And Derek is the president of Kochman Brothers Homes, the people that built the lovely home that we get to wake up in every morning. And glad to have him here in the studio today. Derek, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, you too.
Your Bison ended up winning the national title a few days ago. You're still smiling about that, I bet.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Were you down there?
No, we weren't. We were on a family trip right before that.
Okay.
To Orlando.
Yeah. Were you able to watch the game, though, wherever you were
absolutely.
At?
Yeah, we were back in Fargo.
Were you nervous going in?
Yeah. I knew it was going to be a close game.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Derek and I have had a lot of Bison football talks. Big Bison fan, Derek is. I'm a big fan of your company, my friend. You guys have done an awesome job for our family, and we love waking up in the house that we do. I thought when we're taking a look ahead to 2025 and different industries, I thought I got to get you in to talk about what's been going on. So between the time you built our house a couple of years ago and today, I'm sure you guys have been very busy. How have things been going for you guys?
Good. Yeah, we're keeping busy, that's for sure. You know, it's not as busy as it was back when we built your house, but, you know, things are still staying strong and a little more remodeling in Lake Holmes the last couple of years.
What are some of the trends you're seeing these days in the home building side of things? We'll start with kind of new construction. What are people looking for when they come to you and say, hey, I'm interested in a house? What are you hearing from people?
Oh, boy. It's all over the board. A lot more smart technology kind of stuff, you know, what we can run on apps and, I mean, it's just garage doors, thermostats, all appliances, I mean, everything.
Mm. I know inflation is a thing always for everybody. Are you finding when you've got to bid out a job and you've got to get the lumber and the concrete and the shingles and all that? The government tells us inflation is about 3.5%. What's it look like for you guys?
I would say that's relatively accurate. Okay. I always say the rule of thumb is 4% a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last couple of years, that's kind of where we've been sitting.
Okay.
So, yeah, that wouldn't be surprising to me.
Have you been able to get supply that you've needed? I know, like, when we were doing ours, it was a little tight at times and things went okay for us, but that was kind of on the heels of COVID, and it still was a little goofy. How is it now?
Right. No, it's pretty good now. Yeah, we're able to kind of – we're back to kind of pre-COVID where we're when we order things now. So it's a lot better.
You guys are custom home builders, and so you tend to get people that want to build that little bigger home or that home they've been thinking about for a while. But are there still lots available in this area to build on, or is that getting harder to find?
The lots are getting harder to find for the homes that we're building. So I'm hoping, you know, in the future there's some new developments that are coming up.
What has to happen to make that take place?
That's a great question. I don't develop lots, so
somebody's got to decide they want to do it, huh?
Right. Yeah. Some of these land developers need to, you know, there's more entry level options than there are, you know, the mid to upper right now.
Mm-hmm. Where is there land? I suppose if you keep going south.
Yeah, Horace. I mean, there's lots in Horace. Not every, you know, I mean, I like it out there, but, you know, not everyone wants to, you know, it seems like it's kind of far out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a little bit South Fargo, you know, West Fargo, there isn't much.
Mm. If a home that, say, 5 years ago cost $500,000 to build, what is that home going for today, do you think? What has happened over the years? You talked about 4% a year over the last couple of years, but for a while it was more than that, I know.
More. That 500 is probably 800 just off the cuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about subcontractors and people to do the work? I know you guys have a list of guys that you typically use, but are there young people getting into those trades now that kind of want to get involved in that? I keep hearing how busy the tech schools are with kids that say, I don't want to do the four-year thing anymore.
Right. Well, we haven't seen a lot of that yet, but I'm hoping that, you know, with that new career academy that's opening up and different things, that we get more young people. Because, yeah, the people that we do most of our work with, they're all 40s and up, and a lot of them are getting close to retirement.
Starting to slow down a little.
Age, and, we got some guys that are, well, Bob Kochman, 74.
How is Bob doing? I heard he took a fall.
He did. He did. He's at home. He's probably going crazy right now.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
But, we have a flooring installer that's 80.
A flooring guy who is 80.
Yep.
No kidding.
Painter, he's 81. I mean, some of these guys just keep
going. Yeah, they're good, though.
Yeah,
you want the old guys,
yeah,
because they know what they're doing and they've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah,
home mortgage rates, I keep waiting for them to go down. The Federal Reserve keeps cutting rates, and we don't really see it going down too far. What's your perspective on that?
I'd like to see them go down myself, but yeah, it seems like. It's interesting, the home builders, they came out with a permit report, you know, every quarter. So from 23 to 24, remodeling has gone up like 41% because people are staying in their house because they got these great rates from a few years ago. So they say, hey, we'll just remodel our bathroom or whatever and stay where we're at. So, I mean, so you're seeing a little bit less new homes, but more on the remodeling side.
Say 5 years ago, how many new homes were you tackling a year, and what does that look like now? Has it decreased quite a bit or not really?
No. You know, we're doing more, like a few years ago, we were busier in Fargo, and now we're just busier out at the lake. So people are still building homes out there. And then we have a few more remodeling projects that we're working on.
But okay.
5 years ago, it was just, you know, straight houses.
Yeah. And a lot of them in town.
Right.
Here too, yeah, then. Yeah.
Exactly.
What are some of the things that guys like you are looking at in the industry saying, this is something I'm watching for, I'm kind of keeping an eye out for this? There's maybe a trend that's starting to form or something, a storyline that is worth paying attention to that you find yourself keeping your eyes on and your ears out for these days?
I think, you know, a lot more some smaller houses that don't have steps. We're actually going to build a model home. We are building a model home for the spring parade, slab on grade, no steps. Because I think there's a huge market for, you know, aging population that wants, you know, walk-in showers and accessibility. So I think that's going to be a big thing here in the future.
Mm. Does Fargo, do we have an aging population here? Are we getting older in this town?
I think so, yeah. People keep asking, why aren't people building, you know, more houses like, you know, slab on grade, you know, that don't have steps and everything.
Mm. So more of us are needing those, asking about them anyway.
Right.
What are some of the cool tech things that you guys are doing in houses now? What are some of those, you're talking about some of those smart technology pieces. What are some of the things that people are liking?
Oh, like some of these showers, you know, where they have preset temps and you
can
control
it
from your phone.
Geez. The shower from your phone?
Yeah,
oh, my gosh. How about that?
It's all hooked up to the internet. You need, the plumber needs to be a computer programmer to get it all set up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose all those things, like, I've got too many apps on my phone as it is already. I can't keep them all straight.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. How is it working with your permitting and the city and all that? Is that pretty straightforward? You guys running any, just the paperwork and the red tape? Is that stuff all working out pretty good?
Yeah, no, everyone, most of them are doing it online now, which is a lot easier than what it used to be, where you had to go in and fill out your paperwork, go to the city hall. You know, now you can set up your inspections online. So it works. I think it works pretty good. Mm. Even like if you're doing a house, like, you know, in Otter Tail County, we do that all online now. I don't have to go down there or do anything. So it works pretty good.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I like it.
Yeah, cool. Any surprises you think might be coming you guys' way this year? Anything in the industry that you're thinking this might rear its ugly head for us this year, or nothing really percolating that you can think of?
I don't think there's anything that's going to rear its ugly head, I hope. I mean, we're hoping, you know, we have a new president coming in, and I think we're hoping loosen things up with that. So we're excited.
We're kind of excited about that around here.
I figured so.
Yeah. Well, we needed some adults to get back in that room on a few things, and all the inflation things we talk about, right? You start with fuel prices, and if fuel prices can get more in check, then everything costs a little less to get to where it's got to go.
Right.
People, supplies, and everything.
Right.
All right. What else do people need to know about buying or remodeling a home right now?
Well, it's still a good time. I mean, even though the rates are high, I mean, the costs aren't going up. I mean, if the rates go down, the costs are going to go up. So it's still a good time to do it.
Funny how that happens sometimes.
Yeah, right.
The way that goes, yeah.
You know, a lot of people are going to wait. Well, sometimes waiting isn't the best idea either.
Yeah, there you go. If people want to find out more about your company and get in touch with you and ask a few questions, how do they do that?
They can give us a call, 701-235-2525, or obviously we have a website, kochmannbros.com, kochmannbros.com.
Kochmannbros.com. Derek will pick up the phone and answer all the questions. I've told you already, but can't speak highly enough of these guys and the work that they do. Derek, thanks for stopping by. Great to get filled in on what's going on in your world a little bit. All the best for 2025. Tell Bob to get back on the saddle there and get back in good shape. He's a tough old bird, though. He'll be up moving around, getting her done before too long.
Oh, yeah. So he's already asking to do some office work, which is in his cup of tea, but just to get out of the house.
Just to do something, yeah. All right, Derek, thanks for stopping by. Yeah. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Derek Guthmiller, president at Kochmann Brothers Homes, joining us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, being a bus driver in Fargo these days apparently means saving people's lives from overdoses, a story you got to hear coming up next. So imagine that you're a bus driver, and part of your training now for the new year is you got to learn how to give Narcan to people if they're having an opioid overdose on your bus. That's the story. Well, Valley News Live has a story of a driver named Zach Armstrong. That exact thing happened to him. His story goes, 2 weeks ago, a woman boarded the bus. And she seemed really out of it, but took her seat. Minutes later, another passenger called out for help. Quote, I pulled over and went back to her. She was completely unresponsive and falling over. We checked to make sure she had a pulse. She did, but she was barely breathing. Armstrong didn't hesitate. He got out the Narcan and administered it. Then he got the ambulance on the way. Matt Buss has only carried the medicine for about a year. It was the first time a driver had to use it. Robin Litke-Saul, who is the Fargo Cass Public Health's director, she says everything started to ramp up around 2016. That's when the opioid crisis hit here locally. We had a number of high-profile deaths of young people within a very short amount of time. So that's the story, right? You just never know. But isn't it interesting that if you're doing that job now, you know, if you're like a paramedic or firefighter, cop, that kind of makes sense to me. But now if you're a bus driver, that's got to be a little traumatic, don't you think? But thank goodness there's people like Zach Armstrong who are out there getting that job done and taking care of us out there. So good job to you, Zach. Way to go. And a good job to the Valley News Live team. Courtney Lockie did that story telling us that. That's good to know. Very interesting stuff right there. CNBC reports that Federal Reserve Governor Michelle Bowman says she supports the recent interest rate cuts, but the December reduction should be the last step in the easing process. She says even with the full percentage points of cuts from September through December, there are still upside risks to inflation. She doesn't speak for everybody. There's a lot of people think they need to cut further. I think Michelle is probably right on this one. I don't know that we're seeing this inflation thing completely get under control. We got some work to do. All right, well, we got work to do here in the second hour of the program here on the Steve Alstrom Show. Top 5 at 5 is on the way. We'll tell you how busy they've been in Horace with building permits. That's next. Looking at some of the network news presentations here at the top of the hour, they're talking about the smog factor, basically, in Los Angeles. Yeah, L.A., of course, has got that history of bad air, but looking at some of these graphs of air quality trends, oh boy, not so good going on out there. The 5 o'clock hour of the program is brought to you in part by Precision Concrete Cutters in Ramjack North. They are our studio sponsor. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to pccnd.com to learn more. I was talking with Jay Thomas earlier today on the Flag Plus video cast that we did. We do a little TV show every week here at the building. Jay, Scott, and I. Scott's out of the office today, but Jay and I were talking about these wildfires in Los Angeles, and I was telling him, I said, I've got some questions about this whole thing, and I realize that generally speaking, Gavin Newsom drives his state into the ground, and the mayor of L.A. and the mayors of San Francisco, they have these just bizarre ideas of how to create a successful society. So I'm no fans of them, but on the other hand, I've been wondering, and I have not dug into all the details here, so I'm going to admit that to you, but I was talking about, you know, the situation. It sounds like the first fire that started this whole thing was an arson fire, so it was intentionally set. And these winds, they've got 80-mile-an-hour winds. It's bizarre what they have as far as these wind gusts are coming to blow things crazy. It's been dry out there. So I'm like, okay, how much of this are people really responsible for? And Jay said, you should talk to somebody who's in the firefighting industry. And so I actually texted a friend of mine whose husband is a firefighter, and he goes to do all these things. And I asked her, I said, what's your guy telling you about this stuff? Like, is it legit that, that there's blame to go around on this thing? Or is this something that you really can't do a whole lot about? And she said, my husband says that this whole thing is completely preventable with proper forestry management, which the governor out there chooses not to do. She said, of course, wildfires are always going to happen, but they can be managed and contained. So my husband says, don't feel sorry for him. This is on him, Newsom, and the mayor. Very interesting. And then I started thinking about the climate change stuff here, you know. And they want to tell you how, well, you know, if we do this and we kill all the cows and we don't have airplanes anymore and we get rid of coal, which could actually keep us warm on a cold day like today, if we do all that, oh, we're going to fix everything. I just wonder, like, how much whatever emissions, carbon dioxide, has been generated by these wildfires. Maybe it doesn't work that way. I'm no biochemist, but just have to think that whatever you think you might save by getting rid of the cows, you got to be getting 10 times worse than that by what's happening in these wildfires. So very interesting. But yeah, so someone in the business says very preventable, should have much more readily be contained, or readily been contained than it is. So I just thought you might appreciate hearing from somebody in the biz of firefighting. All right, it's time for the top five at five, brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to nancykellyrealty.com and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small town living is still a thing. These are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. Story number one, Fargo School Board has done a survey asking residents, what do you think if we do a $350 million bond proposal? They haven't done one for a while, so I don't doubt they need to do some upgrading there. They have come up with this $350 million idea to replace some elementary schools, build a middle school and early childhood education center, and rebuild and repair some existing schools. So they asked these people, what do you think about that? Well, the people they contacted by phone, 55% said that they were in favor of the idea. They understood that there was a need and it probably is a good idea. 40% by phone were opposed. So 55-40. Online, 40% of people liked it. 46% of people were against it. So a little bit more in the opposition there. And then they asked people, okay, this is going to have to be paid for. So it'll probably cost homeowners about $20 a month for every $100,000 of market value you have. So if you got a $400,000 house, it's going to cost you $80 a month. Knowing that, the responses were a little different. By phone, 48% said, yeah, I think it's still a good idea. But now more than 50% said no by phone. Online, only 12% expressed favor. 38% said that they were opposed to it. So once you tell people what it's going to cost, that's a lot. $20 a month for every $100,000 of market value to your home. So you got a $500,000 home, which doesn't take much to get to these days in Fargo. That's going to be, well, $20 times five. So you got 100. It's more than $1,000 a year. So if you got a $500,000 house, I would guess your tax bill is probably, what, $7,000-$8,000? Another $1,200 on top of that? Huh. Makes you glad that they got rid of that $600,000 or what, $600 million plan. Remember that one? The one with $600 million or some crazy number like that? All right, so that's story number one. Story number two, Democrat State Representative Lori Beth Hager of Fargo says she believes the state's minimum wage needs to go up at $7.25 an hour, which is the federally mandated number. And she says, I don't think we're going to get it done in the legislature, so I think we might have to go to the people and do it by petition. And so she says, maybe we need to get the signatures of, you know, what is it, 31,000 residents, North Dakota residents, to have to sign a petition to get it on the ballot. And she said that this has actually been done successfully in South Dakota and Nebraska. And if the lawmakers won't do it, maybe the people will do it. I think this is an interesting conversation. Do you think a minimum wage bill would pass if it went to the people on a vote? I do. Look, the whole thing about the government telling business what to pay your people, to me, feels like something I don't want government to be interfering with. Now, that said, there's nobody who's paying people $7.25 an hour. Is there anybody who's making less than $13, $14, $12 maybe? I can't imagine it. Nobody I know is under $15 an hour. It's very different. 5 years ago, at our company, we weren't there, and most businesses weren't, but now it's kind of like, you know, you can't even, you know, start to have the conversation with your entry level people. Your part-time people at that. So very interesting that Lori Beth Hager of Fargo says that, she's tried to introduce bills last two sessions. They don't go anywhere, so they might have to do it through the measure avenue. So interesting there. A couple of notes from Fargo City Commission. I'm going to throw together into one story, story number three. So city commissioners, on a count of 5-0, voted last night to move ahead with a project that will cost about $2.8 million to transform the NP Avenue corridor in downtown Fargo to prioritize bicycles and pedestrians. similar to the roadway configuration to the west, says WDAYRadioNow.com. The project will include a new roadway surface, on-street parking lanes, dedicated bike lanes, improved sidewalks, and boulevard plantings in downtown Fargo. The project will replace existing water main, sanitary sewer, storm sewer, concrete pavement, curb, and gutter, yada, yada. The water main on NP was installed more than 100 years ago and is being replaced to minimize impacts and costs. The existing section of street has exceeded its life expectancy, requires reconstruction due to significant deterioration. I imagine this is why it went through on a 5-0 vote. But the story that I'm reading is part of a multi-year effort to transform the corridor to prioritize bicycles and pedestrians. It feels like it's actually a little bit more infrastructure-related than that. 30% of the cost, it says in the story, will be paid for through special assessments, and the remainder will be paid through state grants and city funds. Special assessments, city funds, basically it's people of Fargo, tax money. A state grant, okay, great, if it can take a couple bucks off the price tag there. And the other one that the city commission talked about and approved last night was to do a request for qualifications to see if any organizations want to step in and manage events at the Fargo Civic Center. They voted last night on a 4-1 count to do this. The mayor says, we had this building that's been sitting now empty for years. We should do something with it. Maybe someone wants to come in and manage the building and run events there. Dave Pepcorn said, I'm not going to vote for that, though, because you don't ask for a request for qualifications to open the building until you're ready to open the building. And right now we don't have any money to spend to do that, but the other four commissioners, including Commissioner Turnberg, agreed it was in the best interest to look to see what the options are. I guess it doesn't cost much to do a request for qualifications, right? It's like an RFP in the business world. You just ask people to submit bids for this thing. I think the bigger question here is, how much is it going to cost to get this building up and running? And didn't the mayor say he wants this for this new deflection center or something? Maybe that's what this is all about. I don't know. But anyway, that's something else that the Fargo City Commission decided to do last night. Story number four is, I've got to throw this national story in here about the wildfires. At least 5 people now are dead. If I'm going to give you the 5 most consequential stories of the day, I don't know how we ignore this fire. 180,000 people remain under evacuation orders. However, earlier today, evacuation orders in Hollywood Hills were lifted. And some people are able to get back to their place now. There are 5 fires still burning. And a couple of them are somewhat controlled, but a couple of them are 0% contained. So they've got a lot going on here. The Minnesota Vikings, if you're a football fan, are scheduled to play on Monday night in Los Angeles. They don't know when these fires are going to be put out. They can't seem to get on top of this. So they may have to move that game to Phoenix, they're talking about. Although the NBA game with the Lakers is going to be played tonight in L.A. I'm a little surprised about that. I'm not usually one to say, like, hey, the world has to come to an end with what, I mean, we do have to live and life goes on. I'm just thinking about the strain on first responders, police, you know, folks like that, that are already dealing with this. Do you want to bring other things that are going to create potentially more issues for the people who are the first responders in that community? So it's a bit of an odd choice to me, but that's what they're going to do. And finally, story number 5, the city of Horace. We know is growing fast. How fast, you ask? Well, glad you ask. Horace, in 2024, according to Mayor Jeff Trudeau, who spoke at the Chamber's State of the Cities event today, said that we had 286 new single-family home permits issued in 2024. That means Horace accounted for 17% of all the single-family home permits issued in the state of North Dakota. Thanks to the forum for putting that little nugget online today. I did not get a chance to get over to the State of the Cities event, but sounds like it was a great time had by all, and we got to find out how fast Horace is growing. All right, 521 here on the Steve Alstrom Show. Short break for us. When we come back on the other side, we will be visiting with, speaking of the Chamber, one of their new team members, a concierge strategist. the chamber, some new ideas. I kind of like it. We're going to talk about it when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Well, you know, the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chamber is always looking for ways to make things better for businesses in the community. And that's good for everybody, because when a business community is strong, that means you've got a great local economy. And our friends at the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chamber have got a new idea, and they are getting this program rolled out. I think it sounds really interesting, so we're very thankful to have on the program Donna Heck. She's a concierge strategist at the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chamber. Hi, Donna. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you taking the time. So this sounds like a very interesting idea. Tell us about the Community Concierge Program.
Sure. Yeah, you know, as part of the Chamber's workforce efforts and initiatives, this program is really all about keeping and attracting the best and brightest people into our community and making newcomers feel at home as they come and want to stay. And we have so many things that we can offer here. And you know, when someone's considering a move to another city, it can be difficult to get good information about the community, much less find like-minded people. So when we belong to a community, we feel that greater sense of trust and safety and security in that community, and that's what we want to foster.
So tell us a little bit about how this works. So if I have a business in the Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo area, do I sign my business up with the Chamber's program and I pay a little fee, and because of that, then any new employees I have coming into my company can access a website and learn more about the different things in the community? How does it work?
Yeah, there's a multi-pronged approach, Steve. We can businesses can go right onto our website and have a targeted menu when they're entertaining candidates or interviewing candidates or considering individuals, and they can choose from a menu of options on what they want that new candidate or that new hire to experience. It might be a lunch that's a specifically curated with intentional introductions, or it might be a community tour. So I have a couple community tours coming up next week where I visited with the individual on the front end, so I get to know them. I get to know them outside of the HR perspective and can curate that tour that's specific to their interests. Or it might be a welcome basket of local goodies and things like that, but it's things to expose our community to them. So that's one way that our businesses can engage in this. And it's right on the Chamber's website, and all they have to do is fill out an interest form and tell us how to contact that individual.
So why should businesses use this, do you think? What's the reason that you think a business should tap into this program? What will it accomplish for them?
Well, you know, acclimation efforts for a business is not just about the business itself. It's about easing that transition for new employees into a community, and it's really a strategic investment in the long-term success and strategy for not only the employees, but for that organization as a whole. And by creating that welcoming and supportive environment, they can, you know, employers can significantly contribute to that overall satisfaction, that first impression, that engagement, and retention of that talent that they have paid dearly for.
Yes.
You know, so that they can get longer retention. They have enhanced quality of life, you know, for that person here in our community, because it's a time savings for them. That they can allow HR, their department from HR, to concentrate on team development under their roof. It's convenient. They can put the community on our hands. Plus, you know, it's satisfaction, job satisfaction. When they're not only happy in their job but in their life, they have increased productivity. It's a greater cost savings from a turnover perspective, because that is one of the largest costs for businesses is that turnover that they've really paid possibly a headhunter or a placing agency, the fees to bring that person in. So it's very expensive for that turnover.
Well, I think it's a great concept, because not only do you want a new employee, if they're moving here from, you know, far away, you want them to feel comfortable within the workplace, get to know your team here, but you also want them to feel comfortable in the community. Where do I go? What do I do to have fun around here? Where do people get together? So it's really great to have a way to plug that in. And I imagine some of your bigger companies in town have kind of their own internal programs, but small to medium-sized businesses certainly don't have people on staff that are working on connecting those things in the community. So it's a great idea. If businesses want to find out more about this, Donna, how do they get some more details?
Absolutely. Just go on to the Chamber's website at fmwfchamber.com, and you will find us at under the Concierge, Community Concierge Program, under Talent and Workforce. And I would be happy to talk to anybody about it. So please reach out to me also, and I'm happy to talk, visit with anybody about it. And share all the opportunities there are for businesses as well as individuals to get to engage in our community.
That sounds great. Donna, thank you very much for taking the time to explain it to us. Sounds like you got a great thing going there.
Thanks, Steve.
Take care, Donna. That's Donna Heck, Concierge Strategist at the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chamber. New ideas on old problems. Love that. 5:30 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Time for a check of news and weather. And then after that, we're going to talk about some of the big stories going on in the financial markets. The S&P 500 up 23% in 2024. With the Trump administration, a lot of us are thinking it's going to be good days for business ahead, but can we do better than 23% that we had in 2024? We're going to talk to John Annis, partner at North Star Financial, about that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. The gang at Wimmer's Diamonds has been doing it for more than 100 years, taking care of people in this community, your friends, family, neighbors. They've got thousands of stories of people they've taken care of in Fargo-Moorhead and beyond. You know, the people travel from miles around to come and shop at Wimmer's. Their four-generation family business is built on a tradition of quality affordability. They are trustworthy over there, and they make a great connection with customers. And those connections last a lifetime. You don't often buy jewelry, most of us. But when you do, you want to go to people you trust, people you know, and people that have been in this business for a while in our part of the world. And that's the good folks at Wimmer's Diamonds. Aaron and the team over at Wimmer's will take great care of you. They're at 4582 32nd Avenue South in Fargo, just west of the tavern, if you know where that is. They'll take great care of you. Tell them that you heard Steve talking about them over there on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, 5:36 here on the program. Good friend of mine just walked through the door. John Annis, partner at North Star Financial, is here with us and taking a look back at what happened in 2024 and what things might lie ahead for us in 2025. John, Happy New Year to you, my friend. Thanks for stopping over.
You bet. Happy New Year.
How did things finish up in the office? I guess when the S&P is up 23% for the year, it's probably a few smiles in the shop.
Yeah, it job gets pretty easy the last 2 years, right? Everybody's happy. It gets to be one of those things where every month the statement goes up. So we've got to kind of remind people it's not always going to be like that, because we've been doing this, since, 95? And so we remember the late 90s when this feels a lot like that. And then we get into 2001 and 2, and it's the flip side of this coin. So, yeah, you've always got to be aware that things are going to change.
Yeah, but you can't just put people in index funds either and have it go that way. So you've had to have done a little bit of work for your people to make it happen. What are some of the things that you think you guys were able to figure out in 2024 that made it a good year for your clients?
I think one of the things we do, I can't speak for, any other shops, but it seems like our experience, we've been at a few places. We do things a little differently when we, design portfolios. We tend to stay away from models. We will use index funds, but we like to pick individual stocks. And, sometimes we look like geniuses, and other times people are wondering, are you really qualified to do this? But more times than not, it's worked out really well for us. So those are things we do, and it even gets into a situation now where you kind of look out and you say, okay, what's 2025 going to be like? Are we going to see another repeat? And we don't expect that. But if you have good quality names, you got to ask yourself, even if they go through a downturn or an adjustment, do I want to own those stocks 5-10 years from now? And if the answer is yes, barring any kind of change to their market or to their sectors, you just got to hold them. And if they do go down and you like them, you should be adding to those positions. But it's going to happen. But if you have good names, you hold them.
How do you explain the success that many have had in 2024 when you consider that we had, the inflationary pressures were still very real in 2024, and maybe we weren't up 9% like we were in 2022, but we still were up 3-4 on top of, you know, whatever else we had in the last few years. So you had some inflation going on. There were a lot of people that were losing their jobs. There were the jobs data we saw, people tapped out on credit cards. You saw some banks kind of getting in some trouble because they had to write off things that weren't collectible anymore. I saw in the headlines each day all these headwinds, and yet I see the stock market continue to perform. How do you kind of reconcile those two, John?
Well, I think you have to look at, you know, for the most part, we had really low interest rates for a long, long time. And even if you raise them for a year, year and a half, they've still been low for a long, long time. The other thing is you have to look at government spending. And if you look at what the government was spending right before COVID, so 5 years ago, and then you look at where we are today, and you also look at the emergency spending that Trump started during COVID, and that was temporary. Those dollars ran off. Not only has that spending continued, it's actually increased. So we're spending at levels higher than during a pandemic and during wartime.
Boy, when you say it that way, that doesn't sound very good. Now, to that end, you actually sent me a note earlier today, say, Steve, take a look at this. I don't want to steal your thunder because I thought it was really good. So walk me through what you saw today that you sent along, because I thought it made me go, holy smokes.
Yeah. So this was one of the people I follow on X, and this is Brian Westbury from First Trust. I think a lot of advisors, you know, follow him. At least they should. And, you know, he was on the other morning or afternoon with Charles Payne, and it was funny because he's always been known as a perma bull. Like, even when things were going terrible, he's like, perma bull.
Now, Westbury or Charles Payne?
Well, they both are, but Westbury. Yeah. They were referring to Westbury.
Okay.
And now Westbury is like, people refer to me as a perma bear because he's not been optimistic because of these levels of spending. And so he had a post yesterday, and he said, the first 2 months of the fiscal year for the government, which is October and November, revenues were down 7.3%, but spending was up 18.3%. Mm. That equated to a deficit just 2 months, the first 2 months, of $624 billion. So you run the numbers on that, and it doesn't end well. Right? Those are recessionary numbers.
Yes.
And so I think everybody should be optimistic about the new administration. But the reality is they're going to have some hard choices to make. And it's not going to look good, you know, at the beginning process of it. Because anytime you cut spending, you're limiting what people are getting.
Yeah. Well, and it makes a lot of sense, too, because if the federal government continues to spend, that means people within the country are getting money. And when people have money, prices stay high, things stay pretty good, and people keep circulating that money around. You spend it at the you know, the grocery store spends it at the, you know, the trucking company, and just it keeps going round and round. What I was probably, as much as the spending piece makes me feel a little nauseous, John, I was thinking about the revenue side of this for a minute. Now, if your revenue is down 7%, that doesn't sound great, especially when your spending is up 18%, so you got a 25%, you know, factor there. But I was just thinking about it. Why would federal government revenue go down? And the only two things I can think of are either interest rates go down because it's coming from individual income tax, corporate income tax, payroll taxes. That's how the federal government gets. So either those tax rates went down, or we've had a slowdown in economic activity that maybe we don't see yet. And I don't think we saw, as far as I know, nobody lowered my tax rates on anything. So that means there's just less economic activity getting taxed, doesn't it? Or am I missing something?
No, I think that's right. And the other thing here, and I don't want to be a conspiracy, you know, theorist.
Oh, you can. It makes for good radio, John. Don't worry about it.
But, you know, we found out late last year that they had miscalculated, misreported, however you want to term it, the jobs numbers to the tune of almost 900,000.
Yes.
I'm wondering, you know, when the new administration gets in and you look at the books, how many other things maybe aren't exactly what we thought they would be? And the reason I say that is, if you look at where the growth has been, it's been in government sector.
Yes.
You know, so it's healthcare and education. Well, if the DOGE team is going to actually cut spending, you go for the low-hanging fruit. That's going to be one of the sectors. So growth is going to have to pick up. And I agree, less regulation, tax incentives, all of that. But there is going to be a digestive process. And I don't think we've been told the clear picture of what's going on. But I do feel confident in saying a lot of the growth that we've had has been because of government spending.
No doubt about it. I am 100. Everything you said, I'm just nodding my head because these are things that make sense to me, too. And I talk about a lot on the show. I did a little search as well. Like, OK, of all of these things, what is it that really drives federal revenue? And I didn't know this, John. You probably do. But individual income tax makes up 54% of federal government revenues. And so that's all of us, right?
Right.
So if we've got a big drop in that, that means there aren't as many of us that are earning to pay those income taxes. We don't like to do it. But again, if you didn't lower the rate, then all you're really doing is lowering the principal that you're being taxed on. Payroll taxes is another 30%. Corporate income tax, 9%. Federal excise tax, like your cigarette taxes and whatever, another 5%. And that's kind of it. That's the only ways the federal government makes money. You think it's so complicated, whatever, but you got those four things. And then there's a couple of the things that are like 2%. But generally, it's those four things.
Yeah.
That really change the picture there. So, yeah, it's funny too, John, because I've been watching all of the people chirping on Twitter about, oh, it's Trump's terrible and whatever, and it's going to be a mess. And I think to myself, I would like to believe that the Trump 2.0 is going to be just as wildly successful time in our country. But there's so much cleanup that has to be done from all this stuff that you just talked about. We could very well have the next 4 years that are really good for national defense and national security because we clean that up. We start to hammer away inflation. We get fuel prices going again. But it may not necessarily relate to a lot more federal income if we don't get the growth because of these taxes that may not be kicking in yet. So it might be another way to say it. It might be a really good year for Main Street 4 years, but it might not be a great next 4 years for Wall Street.
Yeah, and I don't know if it 4 years, but I would certainly, so think about it like this. In a typical year, the market will have a 10% correction a couple of times. We didn't have one last year.
Is that right?
And I think there was almost 40 plus days of new highs. So if you think about that, the market's open. Averaged out, we were making a new high every week. Now, that wasn't the case. We had 1 month or 2 months when we were down. But that's kind of where it got, right? That does not happen. It doesn't happen even when inflation is low, taxes, regulation, all of that, right? At some point, it has to get caught up. And if you look at it, I was just reading a story about Costco. I love Costco. I shop there all the time. Costco is almost at a record high for them, right? Their PE, which just tells us how expensive a stock is around 48. Their all-time high is 54. There's analysts on it that still have a buy. They're trading around 930. They've got a buy on the stock at $1,000. That's an extremely, extremely expensive stock, not from a $930 point, but from the 48 PE ratio.
Price to
right?
earnings comparison, yeah.
So if the analysts are right and it grows and it gets to 1,000, that's only a 7.5% gain. How much risk are you taking right now to buy a stock that's that expensive from a valuation standpoint to get 7.5%? The thing that's fighting against that is if if the 10-year treasury gets to 5%, it becomes a no-brainer.
And where is it at right now?
You're probably, 4.7?
Okay.
You know what I mean? So yeah. You get to 5, that's a magic number. Mm-hmm. People start looking at that. I start looking at that for clients and say, why am I not going to take the 5% layup
100%
without any risk versus the, so those are the dilemmas that we're starting to see in this market, and they're going to play out, and we're seeing it already. So, what are we, a week into this year, and we've had where the market opens really, really strong, and by the end of the day, it's lost everything. Those are not good signs for the market. That tells you a correction. When that happens in the past, we typically have a correction because there's no conviction to hold on to those gains at the end of the day.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. I want to ask you about cryptocurrencies for a minute. And I know that for people like you who have kind of cut your teeth thinking about things through, you know, equities and some bonds and money markets and that kind of thing, these cryptocurrencies, it has to be a disruptor. But I don't know that I've ever seen anything, probably since like the dot-com bubble. Remember that one back in the mid-90s or whatever? What they're saying about Bitcoin, there are some really, really smart people that I know that are not like, oh, let's make $1 million tomorrow, get rich quick kind of people. But they're like, they are all about this. And I'm seeing some of these predictions talking about Bitcoin's at 93,000 today, and it got up to like 108 not too long ago. So it's big swings. But there are people that are saying $1 million on these Bitcoins in the not too distant future. And it's hard for, I think, a lot of us who have money invested somewhere to wonder, should I pull a little bit of money out of some of these stocks and throw it in some Bitcoin or some industries that serve the cryptocurrency industry? What are you telling your clients when they ask you about these kind of things?
You know, I had a conversation with a gentleman the other day, and he's like, I've never bought any stocks. Every time I have money, I just buy land. Mm. I'm like, why? He's like, because I know it. I'm comfortable with it. It's always worked
for
me.
He's done pretty good, I bet.
Right? It's always done well for me, and I get it. I understand it. Like, you know, I can talk to you about diversification and liquidity, but the reality is you've been trained. You should just keep buying land, right? And what I would tell people is, if you think you should have some money there and diversify and you can afford to lose what you put into it, I don't have a problem with it, but you got to understand it and just don't do it because everybody else is doing it and I've got a fear of missing out.
Yeah,
there's got to be a logical reason. I think people should do that, educate themselves. And if after that point they say, we should have a little bit there, then I would say, yeah, you know, I don't have a problem with it. But whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's stocks, whatever it is, if I've got new money I'm putting to work now, I'm dollar cost averaging.
You're not throwing it all in right now.
There's no way.
Okay.
There's no way I'm
doing it. And why is that? Because you just think we might see prices come down on things?
Yeah, I really do. You know, it'd be different if we're sitting here and we're saying the market, instead of being at a PE of 23, instead of the average of, say, 17, 18, mm-hmm. if we're sitting here and the market's at 14, I'm all in.
Let's go.
Right? Well, we're overpriced.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't mean the other side of it is, there's numbers that show if you miss the 20 best days over the last decade in the market, your return is cut in half. The 20 best days,
is that right?
Your return is cut in half.
Ooh.
Nobody knows when those 20 best days are going to be.
No bueno.
So you got to be invested, but you also have to have some strategy on how you're going to get invested.
Yeah. Awesome stuff. I could talk to you all day about this stuff. It's just a fun conversation, and you handle it so well. If people want to find out more, you hear the ads going on the station. The places, if you got a little mud on your boots, we don't mind. I love those ads that talk about, hey, they work with a lot of people that are not necessarily the quote-unquote rich banker type, but people that have done the real work in the trades and farmers, and those people make some good money, and they've got careers to be proud of. John and his team would love to visit with you if you're interested in how things go in the future. How do people get a hold of you, John?
They can call us. We're 701-282-6000 or www.northsfg.net.
Very good. John Annis from North Star Financial. John, thanks for stopping by.
You bet. Happy New Year.
552 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, a story I had to read twice to make sure I was understanding it. She died from a pig attack on her front step. We'll talk about this one as we finish up on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, I hope I'm saying this right. The city of Pataskala, Ohio, is a city of about 20,000 people. So not too small, not too big. And the story going around town there is, sad what happened to that woman. The neighbor's pigs ate her. Investigators, according to CBS News, say a neighbor's pigs may have contributed to the death of a 75-year-old woman whose body was found on her porch on Christmas. Police were called to do a welfare check on 75-year-old Rebecca Westergaard after she didn't show up for a holiday party. When an officer arrived at her house, he found her dead on the steps of her front porch with injuries to her legs. As the officer secured the scene, he saw a large pig enter the area. It was determined the animal belonged to her neighbor. Police believe the pig may have contributed to the woman's injuries. Officers found two other pigs at the neighbor's residence and told the owner the pigs would have to be quarantined. The coroner's office says she died from bleeding out due to extensive superficial injuries by livestock animals. I don't even know what to say about this story. This is just a residential neighborhood, and apparently you can have pigs there in the backyard. Backyard chickens here, I guess. Backyard pigs there. And somehow the pigs got after this woman, got out of the pen, and ate the woman's legs off, and she died because she lost so much blood. I'll leave you with that today, my friend. Have a great night. Keep on flying that flag.